I'm the youth minister here. I didn't introduce myself during announcement, so get that out of the way now. So it is first Sunday of the new year. How many of you make New Year's resolutions or have made one this year? Yeah? Okay, that's good. According to a study that I read, 38% of people, I'm just going to tell you I read this study. I tried to find some verification as to how they did the study and who was involved. I'm just going to tell you it's out there on the internet, whether it's true or not. I'm not sure. But apparently they asked about 1,000 people. This was kind of the response. I don't know where those people lived, but this is what they said. 38% of people make New Year's resolutions. 23% of those who make resolutions will fail within the first week. And a whopping 36% make it past January. So if you, you still got a few days to finish out the week here, and you guys can beat 23% of those who make resolutions. But on the plus side, 9% of people will actually succeed in keeping their resolution. That's actually higher than I would have expected, so that's not bad. So there is a chance. Now, the most common New Year's resolutions are more exercise, healthier eating, losing weight, saving money, spending more time with family or friends, spending less time on social media. All right? Now, those all seem to be good things, right? People rarely make bad things their New Year's resolution. Like, this year, I'm going to rob a bank. Not usually on somebody's list. And it wasn't on these lists, so. But, while thinking about possible New Year's resolutions, let me propose a new one that maybe you didn't think about. What if we wanted to cultivate a greater fear of the Lord? All right, that's what I want to talk about today, is the fear of the Lord. Maybe you've heard this phrase. If you've read the Bible very much, you've probably heard it. It is all over the place. That may seem like a strange New Year's resolution, but I'm hoping that by the end of the sermon, you'll see why it would make a good one, even if you don't decide to adopt it as your own. But the fear of the Lord is mentioned a lot in the Bible, probably none more well-known than the ones in Proverbs, where it says several times. I'll just read a few of them. Proverbs 1:7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. Proverbs 2:5, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. Proverbs 9:10, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. So according to Proverbs, the key to all understanding, the beginning of wisdom, the first thing in order to get wisdom is the fear of the Lord. So what is wisdom then? Is that something we want? Maybe you already have an idea of what it is. But the Bible has actually a really high view of wisdom. And wisdom in Proverbs chapter 8 is even personified as a woman where it is said that she is involved in creation and that she's of more importance than pretty much anything else that was created. But for the purposes of this message, and to give you kind of a more succinct definition than just awesome wisdom, wisdom is knowing the right thing to do in life when the right thing is not morally or otherwise obvious. Right? Does that make sense? Is that a decent definition? We can work with that. So the fear of the Lord is the beginning of this. In order to do the right thing in situations where maybe there's not an obvious answer, we need the fear of the Lord. So, this seems to me like something we could all use, right? Like, we all have to make decisions fairly regularly where it's not like, oh, just turn to such and such page in this manual and hey, there you go. That's a decision you should make right now. Like, we all have things that happen in life that aren't in a manual or something that we've read. So, that's where wisdom comes in, and that's where the fear of the Lord is key to this. Like the best way to spend my time, the best way to spend my money, really anything. I'm not the best at making decisions. I mean, I'm lucky if I make the second best decision when I'm given two options. I don't know about you. Maybe you feel that way too. There's lots of times where you just feel like you're stumbling through life blindly, right? Well, wisdom, godly wisdom at least, helps with that. And it all starts with this fear of the Lord. So now we got wisdom. What exactly is the fear of the Lord? Like I've said, it's found all over the Bible. If you want to find out yourself, just open up a Bible app. You can do this in English pretty easily. Search fear of the Lord, and you will find all kinds of verses. Not just in Proverbs, but in Exodus, Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, Psalms, Isaiah, Ezekiel, Luke, Romans, Hebrews, etc. I didn't even list all the books. Probably could have almost listed every book in the Bible, but you get the idea, right? It's all over the place. And that's just if you search in English. If you put in the Hebrew word for fear, it's So it's even more places. I'm going to read some of those today, but we don't have time for me to cover all of them. Although, if you want to, it's a good idea. I did a lot of that this week, and I was like, this is really good. Like, just reading through these verses is very good for cultivating a fear of the Lord. So, what exactly is it? Well, there's three ideas that kind of come together in this phrase, fear of the Lord. I think the first one, for me, maybe the most obvious one, is this idea of being scared of God, right? Like, is the fear of the Lord the same as being scared? And the Bible's pretty clear that yes, it is. That is some aspect of it, right? Like, fearing something other than God or fearing nothing at all does not lead people to make the right decisions, okay? People who operate out of fear of something else are going to make poor decisions. People who operate primarily out of a fear of the Lord will make good decisions. Think about that. So if I am afraid of what my mom will do if I do this, then if my mom's not around, I'm more likely to do that thing because she might not find out, right? I can get away with it. But if I'm operating out of a fear of the Lord, when is he not around? Like, I am going to always be acting pretty much the same. Whether you're there or somebody else is there, it won't matter. I'll act in righteousness and in a good way because my primary mode of operation is an awareness of the fear of the Lord. Okay? If I am scared of something else more than God, then I'm more likely to steal, lie, cheat, kill, do any of those things for various reasons, because maybe my primary fear is I want to be liked, so I'll lie, I'll make something up so that people like me. I want to have whatever this thing is because all my friends have, you know, the PlayStation 5, so maybe I steal it, right? Or I steal money from somebody so I can go buy it. Like, you're just more likely to do those things if you're wanting something else or if you're afraid of something else than God. So King Jehoshaphat in 2 Chronicles 19 understood this when he picked out judges for Israel. And this is what he told them. In 2 Chronicles 19, beginning in verse 6, he says, "Consider carefully what you do, because you are not judging for mere mortals, but for the Lord, who is with you whenever you give a verdict. Now let the fear of the Lord be on you. Judge carefully, for with the Lord, our God, there is no injustice or partiality or bribery." And then later, just a few verses down, he's installing judges in another city. In verse 9, he says, "He gave them these orders. You must serve faithfully and wholeheartedly in the fear of the Lord. In every case that comes before you from your people who live in the cities, whether bloodshed or other concerns of the law, commands, decrees, or regulations, you are to warn them not to sin against God. Otherwise, his wrath will come on you and your people. Do this, and you will not sin." A judge who is making judgments, right, fearing what God might do if he carries out injustice, like, is more likely to do the right thing, right? He's less likely to be bribed or to be coerced or to be threatened. Would you agree? Like, if my primary fear is the wrath of God, like, there's nothing you can say or do to me that is going to overcome that fear. Like, even if you threaten to kill me, well, I'm going to have to face God, and he's kind of a bigger deal. Like, Jesus even talks about this in Matthew chapter 10, verse 28. He says, "Do not be afraid of those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul. Be afraid of the one who can destroy both soul and body in hell." So obviously, with the fear of the Lord, scared, fear, terror, that's a part of it. Like, you should feel that when talking about God. It can be good to be scared, right? We want criminals to be scared of something. Otherwise, when people aren't around, they'll break in and steal, right? And they might get away with it. We want them to be less likely to commit crimes, so we impose a punishment that hopefully is a strong enough deterrent that they won't do that if they don't fear God, right? If they fear God, hopefully they shouldn't do it because, yeah, well, we talked about that already. And when going into battle, it's good to have a healthy fear of your enemy or what might happen. You don't want to, like, just think, they're just kids. Like, if they're not kids, then that would be bad. You would lose that battle because they're trained swordsmen or something, right? When playing a sport, the same thing. You don't want to think too lowly of the opponent. It's good to have a healthy fear so that you go in respecting the opponent and you give it your best. An appropriate level of this kind of fear is an appropriate response, especially to God, the maker of heaven and earth, the one who will one day bring an end to sin and throw all of those who partake in sin into hell for all eternity. This is an image of God that we should be scared of. In Exodus chapter 20, the Israelites have been set free from Egypt. They're at the base of Mount Sinai, where they just received the Ten Commandments, or they're about to receive the Ten Commandments. And this is how the Israelites react to the presence of God, beginning in verse 18. They say, "When the people saw the thunder and lightning and heard the trumpet and saw the mountain in smoke, they trembled in fear." I mean, not thunder, lightning, trumpet, smoke, big mountain. That is kind of scary. "And they stayed at a distance and said to Moses, 'Speak to us yourself and we will listen, but do not have God speak to us or we will die.'" They probably thought this because they'd just seen a bunch of people die in Egypt, right? "Moses said to the people, 'Do not be afraid. God has come to test you so that the fear of God will be with you and keep you from sinning.'" Fear of God has its place. A fear has its time. As a father, there are times when I have to put a little fear into my children, right? Or a youth minister, sometimes into your children. And in my kids' case, that's to keep them from suffering from a greater wrath. My wife's, obviously. I'm just kidding. But really, like, we all understand there's a healthy fear of authority, even that of a loving parent, which is basically the situation at Mount Sinai. God did not set the Israelites free in order to frighten them away and push them away from him, but to draw them in, to give them his love, his commands. Yes, God loves us, and his goal is not to frighten us away, but to frighten us even towards him. Like, those other things are going to cause worse problems. Yes, God is scary, but that means he can handle the scary problems in the world, because he's the most scariest, kind of, right? Like, there are things that you are scared of in life, and sometimes you need something bigger and badder to take care of those things, and God can be that. That fear can help keep us on the right path towards wisdom. Now, fear of the Lord is not only being scared. However, there is this other aspect of awe, right? Like, wow, God is awesome. Like, maybe if you've been to the Grand Canyon or Niagara Falls or some other really beautiful place, you've just stepped there, you see, like, this just magnificent thing, and you're like pictures don't capture it, don't do it justice. VR headsets can't even do it, like, because you just don't have the same feeling. It's not, you don't have it. But, like, if you're there, you're just wow. Like, it's the only thing you can say, right? It's the only thing you can do. And it just fills you with that wonder. So that is a part of the fear of the Lord. Now, that's not the only part, right? We just talked about the terror part. But awe is certainly a part of it, too. Like, we should be filled with awe when we imagine God, okay? When we think about who God is, when we read his word, when we read about the story of what he did in Egypt, those sorts of things should fill us with awe and wonder. That's clearly what is going on at Mount Sinai as well. They're filled with fear, but there's probably a sense of awe, like, what is going on this mountain? This is crazy. And we see in Psalm 66 a writing that was inspired by their being led out of Egypt, beginning in verse 1. "Shout for joy to God, all the earth. Sing to the glory of his name. Make his praise glorious. Say to God, how awesome are your deeds. So great is your power that your enemies cringe before you. All the earth bows down to you. They sing praise to you. They sing the praises of your name. Come and see what God has done, his awesome deeds for mankind. He turned the sea into dry land. They passed through the waters on foot. Come, let us rejoice in him. He rules forever by his power. His eyes watch the nations. Let not the rebellious rise up against him." So clearly awe is a part of the fear of the Lord. Our thoughts of God should fill us with joy and wonder and make us want to shout his praises. Like it says, "Rejoice in the Lord always," and again I say, rejoice. So part of cultivating this fear of the Lord is that we should fill our hearts and minds with glorious big images of our glorious and big God, so that everything else in life pales in comparison. Right? We don't want our hearts to be drawn away to worship something else, because this other thing fills us with more awe than God. That too leads us into sin. God should be the most awesome thing in our minds. We see something else, we can say, wow, that's amazing. God made that. what else must he be capable of? Right? Being in awe of God allows us to more easily say no to temptations that might otherwise tempt us. Because there's nothing as amazing as he is. So clearly the fear of the Lord is referring to him both being terrifying and awesome. Now, the third aspect of this fear is reverence, or respect, to put a more maybe commonly used term on there. But reverence probably captures it a little bit better. I'll read Psalm 130, verses 3 and 4. It says, "If you, Lord, kept a record of sins, Lord, who could stand? But with you there is forgiveness, so that we can, with reverence, serve you," or that you may be feared. The word translated reverence is feared. Although, in the context, reverence kind of makes more sense, because when you think about forgiveness, you don't usually associate fear with that, right? Like, you better watch out, or I'm going to forgive you. I'm gonna forgive you so good. To me, reverence, it makes a little more sense, but it's the same word, right, in the Hebrew. But if someone were to forgive, or if you were to experience this great act of forgiveness, it would probably fill you with, like, some respect. Like, you would respect them. Like, that was, like, thank you for forgiving me, or for forgiving that person. And going through, in God's case, like, with Jesus on the cross, going through what you did in order to provide that forgiveness. Because forgiveness costs something. It always does. So while awe and terror can be useful, as we've already talked about, in pointing people away from sin and towards good, it's also good to have kind of this softer side. See, as a teacher, for example, you want to put the right amount of fear into students, but you also don't want to put too much fear, because you want them not to cause discipline problems, but you want them to be able to talk to you and ask you questions if they have questions, right? You don't want them to just be so scared they don't learn anything, because they have questions and they don't want to ask because you're going to bite their head off or something, right? Like, you got to toe that line a little bit so that they can talk to you, so that they can learn, but they also don't get out of control. And it's the same with parenting. They need discipline, but they also need to know that you still love them. And this is the same way it is with the fear of the Lord. We need discipline. Like, right? Like, all of us will admit that. We sin. Sometimes on purpose. Crazy. And God needs to discipline us, to point us back towards him. That's what it should do. Point us back towards him. So that we can have a better relationship with him. Just like as a father. I don't just discipline my daughters because I don't like them or I want them to go away. I discipline them because I want to be able to, like, be around them and not be annoyed. Is part of it. Like, if we're just being real, that is part of it. I also don't want you to be annoyed. You're going to have to be around them too. And I don't like getting kicked in the face sometimes. And that's the same way God feels about us, I'm sure. Like, it's more or less just annoying. We're little. We can't really do that much damage. But, like, hey, well, let's chill. Watch it. And it leads to a better relationship. So, to recap, these three things, scared and terrified, those keep us from sinning because you fear what God can do more than you fear someone else can do to you. Filled with awe will humble us and help us to think of God with joy and wonder, help us to view everything else in this world in its proper place. Making much of God helps us to not make too much of other things that are not God. Things that cannot possibly be God and will let us down. Respect and reverence is perhaps, like we said, the softer side of the fear of the Lord. God is terrifying, but part of that is that he's the most deserving of our respect, and if we disrespect him, it can have consequences, right? Like, not following his ways has consequences. All three of these are important aspects to this fear of the Lord, but putting too much weight on any one of these threes can also cause problems. I should be scared of God, but not so scared that I can't talk to him, or that I feel like I need to keep my distance and I can't get close to him. I should be in awe of God, but not so in awe that I think of him kind of like the sun or something. Like, he is this so awesome, unreachable, amazing thing that there's no way that anyone like him could ever love me. And I can't tone down fear to just a softer level of respect and forget that at the end of the day, he is Lord. And he is coming back, and he's coming back with a sword in his mouth to judge the earth. So, fear of the Lord, that's kind of what it is. Three aspects of it. So why should we care? Why should that be something we want to cultivate? First of all, let me give you a few things that it does for us. We talked about how it leads to wisdom. I'll give you one more verse on that front in Job 28:28. He says, "And he said to the human race, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom, and to shun evil is understanding." It also leads to humility, and humility is good to have. Proverbs 22:4, humility is the fear of the Lord. Proverbs 22:4, humility is the fear of the Lord. Its wages are riches and honor and life. You want riches and honor and life? Fear of the Lord. It leads to life. Proverbs 19:23 says, the fear of the Lord leads to life. Then one rests content, untouched by trouble. This is not to say that we will live in a world without problems, or that the problems of the world won't be problems for us. It simply means that we will be mostly untroubled by those things, because all our hope and fear is in the Lord. When things go wrong in the world, it isn't a surprise to us, and it doesn't shake the foundation of our lives as much as it would shake the foundations of others who have their fear in something else or put all their hope in something else, right? Like losing money or family or friends or status or power or whatever it is you might be afraid of losing. If the thing that you fear most is losing God, well, you can't. You can't lose God. He can't be taken away from you. It also grows our love for the Lord. Deuteronomy 10, beginning in verse 12, says, "And now, Israel, what does the Lord ask of you? But to fear the Lord your God, to walk in obedience to him, to love him, to serve the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, and to observe the Lord's commands and decrees that I am giving you today for your own good." So fear and love are both there. Like, those things go together. You can fear and love someone. In this case, God. And it's for your own good. I've already said it, and I'll say it again. The fear of the Lord does not negate our love for God or God's love for us. It strengthens it. It is fear that leads us to live the way that we ought to live. And we walk in obedience. That is how we love God. And that is how God receives love from us. And it also leads to our knowing God. Psalm 25:14 says, "The Lord confides in those who fear him. He makes his covenant known to them." I thought that verse was pretty cool. Like, not only do we get to know God, but the Lord confides. Like, he reveals himself, puts some secrets of his, gives us those if we fear him. That's kind of a neat idea. Proverbs 2:5 says, "Then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God." So it leads to wisdom. Fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Part of wisdom is knowing God. So the fear of the Lord then leads to us knowing God better and being known by him. To truly know God and be known by him, we need to desire to know, or we should not desire to know all of him or as much of him as we can. If we emphasize one part again, if we only want to know the soft, loving, kind side of God, then there's going to be a part that we don't get to know. And then if we run into something scary, we're going to think, he's just a kind, generous soul. He doesn't really do anything. Like, he won't harm anybody. So what's he going to do if I'm in this really big trouble I've got myself in? But if there's a healthy fear of God and you know who God is, that he also is one who sets the captives free and disciplines his people and can raise and destroy nations, then that's a God that can take care of whatever your puny little problems are. Right? Now, you might be saying, that's all good. I'm convinced that the fear of the Lord is important, but I don't fear God any more right now than I did 10 minutes ago. Like, what you've said is great, but God's still the same God. It hasn't changed my image of him at all. So how do we get the fear of the Lord? Psalm 34:11 says, "Come, my children, and listen to me. I will teach you the fear of the Lord." So apparently, it is teachable. But you can be taught the fear of the Lord. How can you be taught the fear of the Lord? Well, how do you get taught anything else, really? Like, you have to be here, somewhere where people are teaching about God, where it grows your view of God. You have to be in the Word. Like, a lot of times there's textbooks, right? You read or you find stuff out. You study God. You get to know Him better so that you grow in your fear of Him and know who He is more completely. You also have to be around others who fear the Lord. Like, if you want to learn a trade or something, it's good to be around somebody who already knows how to do those things. And they can teach you all of those things, right? That's the same way it goes with the Lord. You can be taught those things. It doesn't mean that I can stand up here and talk about the fear of the Lord and why it's good and even read some verses and paint this big, beautiful picture of who God is if I were even capable of that with words. But at the end of the day, there's only so much that can be done to help God and this picture of God move from just a concept, this fear of the Lord, from just a concept, an idea, to a deep place in your heart where it actually takes hold and does something. I can tell you all day that a puny God can't save you, right? I can remind you over and over again that God created all that is around us, that God holds our very lives in the palm of His hands, that God is our final judge. But if the picture of God that you have is still just one that would never harm a fly, or one that is just there when you need Him and is just kind, then it's not going to do anything. A true fear of the Lord leads to wisdom because it causes us to follow God's lead. Like, it needs to change our actions. And the more that we act on our fear of the Lord, the more we will actually understand it. Because we'll do something. We'll be like, oh, that makes sense. God's ways are higher than our ways. Yes, we should follow Him because we love Him and He loves us. Yes, we do it because we understand that inherently God must be wiser than we are. But we also do it because of what the writer of Hebrews says in Hebrews chapter 10, verse 26 through 31. If we deliberately keep on sinning after we have received the knowledge of truth, no sacrifice for sins is left, but only a fearful expectation of judgment and of raging fire that will consume the enemies of God. Anyone who rejected the law of Moses died without mercy on the testimony of two or three witnesses. How much more severely do you think someone deserves to be punished who has trampled the Son of God underfoot, who has treated as an unholy thing the blood of the covenant that sanctified them, and who has insulted the Spirit of grace? For we know Him who said, "It is mine to avenge, I will repay." And again, "The Lord will judge His people." It is a dreadful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. Are you willing to follow what God says for every area of your life, no matter what He says? That's what the fear of the Lord, that's what wisdom will teach you to do. You see, at the very beginning, there was Adam. He was just a simple man in the garden, had one command to obey. He was surrounded by all this goodness and told by God to enjoy everything that was there. He just couldn't eat fruit from one tree. Life was good, but Adam desired being like God over knowing God, and he lost everything, including life itself, because of that decision. Jesus, on the other hand, was not in a garden. He was in an already messed up world and was commanded by God not to just enjoy everything, but to trust Him and be crushed on the cross, to be crushed by sin and lose His life. And if He would do this, if He would give over control of His life and trust it into the hands of God, then not only would God give Jesus His life back, but He would give all of us our lives back. All the lives that were lost. And we would all live. And Jesus did that. So when Jesus asks us to hand, or when God asks us to hand over the reins of our lives, to let go of our lives and follow Him, He's not asking us to do something that He hasn't already done. Something that He Himself was not willing to do. Another place that we see this is with Abraham, right? Abraham was asked to do something pretty crazy, to sacrifice his only son, Isaac. He wanted an heir and a son his entire life, and he was really old, and he finally gets one. And God's telling him to sacrifice him. If Abraham had feared losing his son more than God, or if he had loved his son more than God, he would have probably lost everything that God had promised him. In Hebrews 11:19, It says Abraham reasoned that God could raise him from the dead. Reasoned is the Greek logizomai, which is where we get logic from, right? Or kind of wisdom. His fear led him to this proper reasoning, this logic that, hey, if God's asking me to do this, God gave me my son, he can give me another one, or he can even raise my son from the dead because he is God. His fear was in the right place. He feared God more than anything else, at least in that moment. Now, he messed up other times, but that's for another day. So, for this year, what are you most afraid of in 2025? There's a lot of things to choose from, probably, right? In your life specifically, in the world at large, what are we afraid of? If the answer is anything other than the Lord, if our biggest fear is not God, then that'll lead us to some wrong thinking. We'll do things in our lives that aren't in our best interest or the best interest of those around us. The only way to fix that is to fix our eyes on God, to cultivate a healthy fear of the Lord, to read the Bible, to be in church, to worship him and understand the full majesty and power of the God that we serve. The God who created everything, the God who parts seas, who destroys and builds up nations and people, and look toward that God and know that fearing anything else in the face of him is ridiculous. Be like being scared of a little house cat when there's, you know, a giant lion nearby. Nobody would do that. You'd definitely run toward the house cat and away from the lion, not the other way. Or as Proverbs says over and over again, the opposite of the fear of the Lord, anything else, is just foolish. And foolishness will lead to your own destruction. If your greatest fear is the Lord, then you are on a great path towards wisdom that leads to knowing God and loving him. So I would challenge you during this year, pursue the Lord, pursue knowing him, pursue fearing him. And if you'll stand, I just want to close by reading out Romans 11, 33 through 36. Oh, the depth of the riches of the wisdom and knowledge of God, how unsearchable his judgments and his paths beyond tracing out. Who has known the mind of the Lord, or who has been his counselor? Who has ever given to God that God should repay them? For from him and through him and for him are all things. To him be the glory forever. And all God's people said, amen. Have a good 2025.